Okay, you are watching or listening to episode number 50 of the Dan Time Podcast. And wow, 50 weeks, close to a year, goes by pretty fast. It really accelerates the older you get. And if you have children, everything that the old folks tell you is true. It blows by, and that's no different here. And I always say, hey, I'm so excited to roll out this guest. I'm so thrilled to introduce this person to you. I want to say something really sincere. This is the guest that I would love, that I would have liked to have imagined that would be here for episode number 50, because he holds a special place in my heart as a true friend. And Mr. Denny Lyons is here today. I'm going to introduce him.
How are you? Hey, man, congratulations on 50 episodes.
Yeah. Thanks, Denny. And what a pleasure to have you here and to see you. We've never done a Zoom call. We've had very few phone calls since the old days, which were 10 years ago. It's not that long ago, but that is the old days for us. And great to see you, man. Thanks for being here.
Yes, man. I'm so excited to be here. I always love talking to you, my friend.
Well, it's the Dan Time Podcast. Dan McArdle, that's me. I'm your host. I always imagine that this might be somebody's first experience with the show. So let me just really quickly summarize what we do here, what I do here. It's an interview show. The joke is that oftentimes it's me talking to Dans, just like myself, or really not anything like me other than the name. But a lot of times, as you've seen, it's Danny, Daniel. Well, actually, we've only had one Daniel, but we've had Danielle, Danny, so on and so forth. But to have a Denny on here is not a far stretch, and such a special guy, too. But people that appear on this podcast either have a background in creative arts, that might be performing or music. I've had some athletes, but sometimes it's just people in my network, and that's where Denny is. And some special significance with Denny. How are you doing, man? Again,
man, I'm
great
wonderful.
To lay eyes on you.
It is, my friend. And I'll tell you what, I do miss hanging out with you down where you're recording right now in Pensacola. What a great town. I know you do a lot of good promotion of that place, but I don't think people understand what a beautiful beach it is and how much fun it is to be around. It's a great place. So go visit Dan down there if you guys can.
Yeah, I probably don't talk about it enough. On the early episodes, I did have some local Pensacola guests, but it is a great place to vacation. You see people young and old here enjoying this town. There's a lot of affordable things to do. Obviously, we have the beaches, but there's the city is moving in the right direction. A lot of exciting commercial development, residential development. People are finding out. And we saw after the pandemic, Denny, I actually met a lot of people that moved here from the Pacific Northwest or the Midwest or the Northeast, and they came here and it's just, they could exhale. Nothing against any other places or states or countries, but we just, you know, we work hard down here. Sometimes people, they call it island time. Like we do have a reputation of taking things a little slower, but man, there are some hardworking people in Pensacola and doing great things for the community. So
there's a great Navy base there. A lot of good, Navy airmen that get trained down there. And of course, the rest of the town's just full of all sorts of different wonderful people, good business owners. And you can find anything you want to find down there. One of my favorites is that Crabs on the Beach is a great restaurant right on the water. And they have a church service and it's beautiful. Lots of good music, right? Sitting in these chairs right on the beach. And then it immediately opens up for bottomless champagne. So that gives you an idea of Pensacola.
Well, all right, so let me just, I don't think I ever asked you, when we met, which was about 2014 or 15, through a mutual friend, I don't want to go too far without mentioning his name, Tim Trudell, has now lived in Hawaii for close to 10 years. When we met, how long had you lived in Pensacola?
Gosh, I probably had been down there. I lived there about 5 total years. So I would say at the time I lived there about 2.5 years or so. So maybe 2, something like that. And I was working at some local hospitals down there. And so I eventually found a home down right near downtown. And way back then, I mean, you could buy a home for almost nothing in Pensacola. The cost of living was tremendously low. So I was very fortunate to be able to get my first starter home down there. And so you and I must have met just maybe a year after I bought that house.
Well, Danny, I'll never forget the time that that I first met you, and I was hanging out with Tim. So this is a couple years before I met my wife, Natalie, and maybe about 18 months tops that I'd been in town. So I'm in my early 30s. I'm doing what guys of that age that are unattached tend to do, you know? So I was out around town a lot, and Tim said, we got to meet my friend Denny. You're going to love him. Now, everybody hears that at some point in life. Hey, I'm going to introduce you to Chris or Joe or whoever. You're going to love him. Like, we hear that. But, man, it could not have, truer words have not been spoken.
Absolutely, man. And I miss that all three of us can't spend more time together because him being in Maui makes it a little difficult. But if I could transport him here at any given time and we could take a split time between Maui, Nashville, and Pensacola, I feel like all three of us would be pretty happy people.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. People listening, if you know me, if you're a friend of mine or a relative, I try not to have, if I had only my network on this podcast, it would be like, okay, let's hear from some other sources. But I got to say, you know, everybody needs, or no, what I was trying to say was, if you're going to come on this show, I'm probably going to flatter you. I think Jim has said, Dan, I could, you have me on anytime you want, because it's a real ego boost to be on the show. But I want to reinforce what a good guy you are, an electric personality, Denny. Like I said, that first memory, I think it was at the bar Play, which is a pretty cool concept. And I just knew, oh, this guy, I need more of this guy in my life. Like,
man, well, me and you, it's nice because sometimes you hang out with people and you feel like, okay, I can bring this person up today. But Dan, you've always been the kind of guy that's just, hey, let's go have fun today. Nothing's going to bother me. We're going to have a wonderful time. And I remember when you met your wife, you're like, got this girl I really like. I think I'll marry her. And I was like, let's do it. Go for it, my friend. You're just it's nice to be around someone like you, my friend. So I feel you.
Yeah. For me, during that period was a little bit of a wayward period. I knew that I couldn't do it forever. I needed to kind of get my act together, which, you know, half the time it was. But some things were going on, and there was, as anybody goes through, some turmoil or some uncertainty. And that was, I don't know if I would call it a dark period, but it was, I needed some good friends and good relationships, not so much romantic relationships, but just good bonding with friends. And man, you and Tim were just what I needed. And I hope that I brought something to the table as well for that short time.
I love it, buddy. And we were lucky to have some other friends. Unfortunately, some of them passed away since then. But I'll tell you what, that's just a wonderful group. It's nice when you got, when everybody is have no needs. They're just like, whatever, we'll meet wherever you want. We know we're going to have a good time. And if we feel like moving, we'll go somewhere else. And, but really the company is what we looked forward to, not necessarily what we were going to do. It just knew if all of us were hanging out together, we were going to have a wonderful time.
Yeah, and it didn't last that long as far as all of us together. I do want to make mention of our dear friend Kelly Donovan, who passed away in 2021. What a sweet person, a really special friend to me. And that's a friend, another friend that you, anybody would want to have. And yeah, we miss her all the time.
Agreed. I totally agree. What a wonderful woman.
Danny, now, we could shoot off on so many different directions here. I want to talk about your career a little bit, but man, I really want to talk about some UNC basketball, sports,
yeah,
memories, connections. There's so much here. I understand, and I don't want to really give too much away here, but you've got a pretty unique connection to the University of North Carolina. And
so, to give you a little backstory, I've been watching Carolina basketball since I was a little kid. And before I grew up mostly in Wilmington, North Carolina from 11 to 17. But prior to there, my parents had lived there. They worked for a company called Corning down there. And they lived up near a school called Laney High School. And when they lived there, my older sister, Kate, was probably in diapers. And my dad played in a church basketball league, but he was terrible. But he would practice in his driveway all the time. They had a big old driveway. And they had these kids who lived kitty corner them with a bunch of sons. And one of them would come over and practice all the time or play with his brothers. And so one day, one of these kids was in high school and he was getting bigger and stronger. And these are the old school backboards that didn't have spring loaded rims or anything. So he learns to dunk and he breaks the backboard because he yanks on it and it has no spring. So he just pulls it and just splinters it up. So my dad, he's a pretty good, great guy. He at times said, you know what? No big deal. Just go home, make me a new backboard with your dad. If you can make it out of plywood, I don't care. And we'll hang it back up here. So the kid went home, took a piece of plywood, basically got the correct size square, put it back on there, brought it back to him. They hung it back up, and that kid still played with his brothers and practiced on it all the time because he lived right kitty corner to where he lived. And that kid ended up being Michael Jordan. And so Michael Jordan first learned how to dunk on my dad's backboard and broke it. And what's interesting is in that documentary about him, they talk about how his dad built a basketball court in their backyard, but that is not true. He did not have a backboard back there, and his dad couldn't afford it. He had a bunch of kids he was taking care of by himself, basically. And so they all played in my dad's driveway when he lived there, and that's how he got to know them all. So we watched him when he went to UNC. And then my older sister, when we had moved back to Wilmington, she went to UNC and had a great athletic career there herself, actually. She had never done crew in her life and then ended up going on the third boat in the country and getting bronze nationals her first year doing crew. And then she goes, oh, this is too early in the morning. And then she decided, oh, I'll just play lacrosse and then played varsity lacrosse. I mean, that's just who she was. So then after she left her last year, I started in 2003. And man, I'll tell you what, I love UNC. But yeah, it's been a great time. I've special my heart, my place my heart, especially for the 2005 national team. But I don't know if I've told you that story about when I originally got to meet all those guys.
No.
So I used to play all the time with this guy named Ethan, and he is just one of those people that can play anything, soccer, baseball, tennis, golf, doesn't matter. He's a good athlete. So we used to just pack up bags of basketball stuff and go play every sport known to man. But after my freshman year, I had broken up with a girlfriend and I needed to meet more friends because you know how it goes, you get too siloed your freshman year if you're not going out and meeting people. So I was like, I need to learn how to meet more people here. Everybody's already friended up. And so my sophomore year, I was like, I'm going to learn to play basketball. I never really played it. And so I started playing every single day. And there are these courts at UNC. There's four sets of two, and there's like a net in the middle. And the very back ones, it's Carmichael Gym, is what it's called. And it's the one they originally, the stadium behind it's now the women's stadium, but that's the original UNC men's basketball stadium. It's right behind there. And so I started on the very back, just terrible. And by the end of my sophomore year, getting into my junior, I was getting really good. And I ended up playing on the second courts. Now, you had to be like basically on the varsity team to play in the first courts. They would sit open because people were like, it had a reference spot. It could be like 10 teams waiting, but they still wouldn't play on there. And so, anyway, I was playing against a guy and we were playing pickup. And he had been the North Carolina State dunk champion. And so he'd won for the whole state while he was in college. And he was a PhD student. This guy was like 6'5", athletic, 225, just a beast. Anyway, we're playing and he goes up to dunk on me and I block the heck out of it, knock it all the way across the fence. However, he hits me so hard, I go flying like 20 feet because I was 6'1", maybe 195. This dude just pushed, I mean, blast me across the court. But I did block his dunk, which, it hurt afterwards, but he gave me because he had played on the practice squad with the UNC varsity team prior. He let me have what they call the Carolina Blue shoes. So you're not allowed to get Carolina Blue basketball shoes unless somebody from varsity gives you permission. And it's kind of like a rite of passage that once you get them, because people are serious about it. Once you have them on, I mean, you're picked for every pickup game going forward. And so that was like paradise. So I had started playing a lot more. And all of a sudden, I bump into a guy and I turn around. And he's like 6'8". And I realize, this is post 2005 national championship. And I had already met a guy named Raymond Felton, who was the point guard. And I was pretty good buddies with him. And so I turn around, and that's Jawad Williams, who was on the national championship team. And the next thing I know, I'm bumping shoulders with Sean May, who I'd known a little bit since my sophomore year. Little known fact, by the way, Sean May is super brilliant. I think he was like an economics major or something, or he was double majoring, had like a 3.85, always had two girlfriends. But anyway, he's a UNC assistant coach now. So all of a sudden, I'm playing pickup basketball. I must have played 25, 35 times with the national championship team and the squad. That's like Rashad McCants. And it was Raymond Felton, Troy Williams, Sean May, Jack Emanuel, Melvin Scott. It was Scott was his last name. It was backup point guard. Anyway, a bunch of other really great players. And so we got to play all the time. And then I occasionally, me and another guy would go play on the practice squad for the women's basketball team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when you're playing pickup games with those guys, are they feeding you the rock, or are you trying to just
Yeah, you
focus?
know, they're kind. Let's just put it that way. I'm not playing competitively with them. So I knew Rashad pretty well. Originally, he was introduced to me in the there's this famous place at UNC called the Pit. And Ray Ray or Raymond Felton, I don't know what he goes by now, but he introduced me to Rashad McCants. Rashad McCants did not like white people. And so he was kind of mean mugging. He wouldn't really talk to me that much. And then eventually, I used to go to this place where they had nickel shots on Tuesdays at like 5 p.m. when nobody was there. And him and I would meet there every Tuesday and do nickel shots. So we ended up getting along.
Yeah.
And so I would either guard Rashad McCants, who was way bigger, way faster, and 1,000 times better than me. And the agreement was he wouldn't drive on me, but I couldn't guard him within 7 feet of the 3-point line. And he never messed with me. So, what do you do? But normally, the most competitive I could attempt to be, which he was still so much better than me, was the backup point guard. And him and I, he was about my size, height, still way faster and better than me, but we got to play a lot. It was really fun.
How when you're setting those picks, tell me about some of the or taking the charge or
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You don't want to try to block a guy like Sean May, who's 6'9", 295 pounds or whatever he was.
Yeah.
Because not only it's funny because you're used to when you play pickup basketball and you try to, let's say, play a staunch defense, which I was known for playing hardcore defense. When they kind of do that lean back push towards the rim, normally you kind of bounce off them and you come back in. But when they did it, I mean, it was like you went flying across. You must have moved like 6 feet. It was like somebody picked you up and placed you like 5 feet away from them. So there's not much you could do. Or they'll run through you, man. I'll tell you what, there's no mercy when it comes to it. So you got to, understand your elbows are going to hurt after a game. You'll take a couple busted knees, but it's worth it.
I had this kind of in my notes here, but I got to go ahead and ask now. The composition of your closet, Denny, tell me about the representation of UNC threads to just everyday wardrobe. How much Tar Heel blue is in, if I open that closet, it's a sea of blue.
It's a sea of either dark blue with light blue on it, or light blue with probably black or dark blue on it.
Yeah.
And it's a problem we have. It's not just me, it's Tar Heel. So people always laugh. They're like, dude, you're wearing a Tar Heel shirt and a Tar Heel hat, and it's not even like basketball or football season. And I'll say, well, that's what we do. Everybody does though. Those Tar Heels are out of the way. So
Yes.
it's like my wife just bought me another shirt that just happened to be on sale from Nike, and it comes in. It's another UNC shirt. So I would say half of my t-shirts are probably UNC gear, and 70% of my winter clothes and hoodies and everything else are UNC. So it's outside of actual work shirts, which I still have some UNC polos, is it's quite a bit of them.
How do you handle? I know this past season was tough. There was a tough ending, 2023 NCAA tournament. How do you do when, obviously, there's the championships, but what's it like if I'm hanging out with you? Do I need to just say, "Hey, Danny, I'll see you tomorrow. It's been fun," and just leave? Or what's it like when the final buzzer hits and it has not ended well?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's a lot of sadness,
Yeah.
a lot of me cursing. So my cousins actually went to Alabama, and so I probably said some not so nice things to him, and made a lot of jokes at Alabama's expense. Basically, my wife went upstairs and just left me, and it just kept telling me to keep it down, but. It's a sad moment. It takes me some time to get over March Madness because that's my favorite time of the year. But I'll do my best to stay positive. And if we win, I'm the best to be around though, but it can hurt.
Then, of course, there's Tar Heel baseball. They were in the College World Series, eliminated by Florida State, but I mean, a pretty competitive program there in baseball, women's
Every
basketball.
year. Yeah, they make it to the College World Series every other year, if not almost every year. They have some of the best baseball coaches in the country. And if you ever hear like anybody on Sports Center or any of those talk about, they have some of the best coaching and recruiting people there is. So they produce ton. When I went to UNC, there were two that I think they were like 6'9" or 6'10", and they were twins, and both of them were pitchers, and both of them went in the first round of the MLB, which is crazy, you know. Two twins that are that like basically Randy Johnson going to the
Yeah.
MLB. But this year it was a guy named Travis Honeycutt who got drafted first round. He comes from near where I grew up, Wilmington. The Honeycutts are a huge set of cousins and families. And it's not surprising that the Honeycutt went to the MLB because everybody in their family and all for the last like 30 years around New Hanover County and surrounding counties, all of them are good at sports. They play sports until their 50s, and they're always the captain of their teams and best. It doesn't matter. They're all just the men and women of those families are just talented.
Without going too much down a rabbit hole here, because I want to move on to some other things, but notable UNC baseball alumni, Daniel Baird, got into a Dan Time mention there, but also, you know, guys like Chris Iannetta, Brian Roberts, Kyle Seager, BJ Surhoff, Walt Weiss.
Yeah, I mean, just tons of them, and it's almost unfortunate that they don't get as much love as they deserve because they get a little overshadowed by basketball, and now you know football is always so big. But I'll tell you what, there are some devoted fans that go to those games religiously every game, home game for decades, and so they do get a lot of love back at UNC.
All right. So, Denny, now, those of you, I don't know how many people are listening to Dan Time and you also follow on social media, but on the Instagram page, I think, or the Facebook page, you may have seen a couple photos from 2 months ago or so. I think it was April or May when Denny and his wife Ashley were in town. And that was just such a fun afternoon. I had a chance to meet Denny's new wife, Ashley. I say new, I think you guys were married last
Last
October.
year.
Yeah.
Yep, last October. We got engaged at the in Maui at Tim's wedding. Not during his wedding. I wouldn't do that to him. It was prior. Not going to step on that man's foot. But I did play violin at his wedding there. And somewhere over the rainbow for his wife Hillary. That her top choice.
I so wish I could have been there. I love seeing both of you guys happy. Tim with Hillary. I've met Hillary when they were in town a few years ago, and you with Ashley. And oh my gosh, so many questions here. Let me ask you about the violin really quick, because how far
Sure.
back does this go? It's not something that everybody plays and plays really well. Does this go back to when you're like 8 or 9 years old?
Sure. So I was a problem kid when I was, you know, prior to being about 11, like real bad, to where my parents, I just talked back to teachers and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to. So my parents basically gave me an ultimatum and said, Denny, you're either going to military school or you're going to learn to target all of your energy into something. So your sister plays the piano. What are you going to play? We have a violin. We had like a viola, flute, and stuff. And I said, I guess I'll play the violin. And I ended up loving it. My mom was just talking about it the other day. Like she'd go, Denny, go practice. I go practice 45 minutes, an hour. And what's a really cool story about that is I ended up taking lessons from a lady named Lorraine Westermark out of Wilmington, North Carolina. And eventually I got down to her. We actually traveled 45 minutes for lessons a couple of years prior, and she had learned the Suzuki method, which is a famous classical method of learning from the Suzuki himself, and he's probably sold 100 million books on learning at least. And the reason he took her on as a student was because when she was a kid, she had polio, and half of her brain was killed off by polio. So violin was a way for her to teach her other half of her brain to learn to use both sides of her body. And so she could fully function as a normal human being. You would never know that she only had half of a hemisphere working brain, which is pretty wild, right?
Yeah.
And that's a crazy story. So anyway, I ended up, she was a spectacular teacher, had a lot of wonderful students. Before me, she had a student named Keats who went to Juilliard. She got me an audition. Keats did at Juilliard, but I decided not to pursue music. But at the time, you know, I through different teachers and I got pretty good. Turned ended up being it's a third chair in the UNC Symphony Orchestra, and I'd won some concerto competitions. I originally was majoring because I went to college as a junior with credits, and so I had to fill up a couple of years to go to business school. And so I took a bunch of time to, I was like, I'll just major in music as well because they agreed to give me more money on top of scholarships I already had. So After I got into my second music tier, I said, forget this. This is the hardest course on the planet. I'll tell you what, brother. That's a humbling experience because I've taken all the economics courses you can think of, statistics. I was pre-dental, so I took chemistries and bios, and nothing compares to how hard music theory is. Not even close. So I had finished with a minor musical performance there. But yeah, I did quite a bit of it. I once opened with a group for Peter, Paul, and Mary at the Olympics for about 15,000 people. I think it was in Atlanta. But yeah, man, I was lucky. I got to take master classes when I was a teenager from a guy named Joshua Bell. And he ended up going up as, I think he's rated the third best violinist to ever live now. He's truly a
Wow.
spectacular violinist. Yeah, he's amazing. He was in movies like The Red Violin and a million others. He still sells out every concert worldwide, and his tickets cost like $500. I mean, but he was much younger back then, naturally. That's 25 years ago.
Now, is there like, I'm sure there is like session work out there if you want it. Like, can you go collaborate with people or be on a record if you wanted to do that?
Well, so if you want to do that locally in most other places, the answer is yeah. And I used to play in jam bands in Pensacola, actually. I used to play with a guy named Matt, and he played with his wife, and they were amazing. And I would just come out there, I'd play my electric violin. I mean, I'd even be able to, one of my favorites is we would play Lenny Kravitz type music, and I would d do a distortion pedal and play something like that kind of stuff or other. Anyway, but in Nashville, the answer is no. Because unless I went full time and started playing all the time, the musicians here are so unbelievably spectacular that there's almost no comparison. So if you go down to Broadway, which is our main street, they don't charge covers to go in any bar because the expectation is you tip the band directly. And so you can get to for free in any bar on Broadway. But what they'll do is they'll start at like 2, they'll play for 3 hours, they'll go to another place, play for 2 or 3 hours, go to another place, play for 2 or 3 hours. And they always are alternating. And those bands are making, $20,000 a week in tips, sometimes less.
Wow.
But they're spectacular. They'll open for like George Strait's place. He's famous for whoever is playing his place most often is his opener if he comes into town. Same with like Kid Rock and a bunch of the other ones. So could if I practice for the next couple of years, sure, maybe. But at the moment, no way.
Oh man. So cool though. I love that. And it makes total sense. I'm thinking about my children and my oldest who seems to just I could see him playing an instrument or being some sort of performer. I don't know I can't put my finger on it exactly, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to put them on something, I recommend always the piano. And the reason I say that is the piano, if you hit the note, it sounds the same 100% of the time you hit it. And kids have a lot of, and it doesn't hurt to play. Like when you learn to play an instrument that's awkward to hold in position or it's too large for, like a saxophone might be too big for a young kid's hands. You know what I mean? So the piano is always the same size the entire time they play it. Their hands just get bigger, right? And so you don't have to buy multiple. Like on a violin, you have to start with maybe a half size. They even have quarter sizes, then three quarter sizes, and you got to buy them and buy them, and they're not cheap. But a piano is the same size from the day they start playing it to the day they, hopefully play it forever. And it's also the one that'll teach you bass clef and treble. So man, I bet your kids would be great at that. Does your wife play any instruments?
No, she does not. I come from a family where I would say my dad's side of the family doesn't appear to be, or at least the immediate family. I don't think there's any musicians there. I think it all comes from my mom's side. My brother plays guitar. My grandmother played guitar, and I think there's some other stuff going on with other relatives that I just never met. But
That's cool. Well, it's in you. So you've got the genetics. Your kids got them now. So you just got to keep them pushing. Make them practice. 15 minutes a day is fine, as long as they do something, right? We're finding the same thing. My daughter Ellie, she's 6. We're pushing her on piano, and my daughter Lucy, who's 8, I'm pushing her hard to practice more on the violin. So we're still in the very beginning stages of both, but we're working on it.
I was going to mention your daughters, and I met Lucy when she was a baby, and that demonstrates how fast the time goes. I remember her being in the baby car carrier.
Man,
Denny.
she went everywhere with me and Betsy. We took her everywhere. That's her mom. And gosh, she was an active little baby in good mood. And I'll tell you what, if you take them out when they're young, they get verbalized pretty well with that. And that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's really
I
important. I try to get my oldest when he was our first baby, just I take him places all the time. Saturday morning, we were going somewhere, if the weather was nice, going somewhere, and kind of get them used to traveling and getting out of the backyard. Like you said, well, actually, he was not a very good traveler as a baby. A lot of screaming, lots of screaming.
I think I remember when me and you and Tim and a bunch of our other friends were over, and it was one of Lucy's birthdays, had to be her first or second birthday, probably her second. And I think we gave her a little cake, and I think she ate the entire cake. I don't know, probably like an 8-inch cake, and she just shoved the whole thing in her face. It was a green, too, so it was a mess.
Your daughters, a couple questions here. I really admire you, Denny. You know, most dads should be involved to some extent, but you really love these girls. This is the focal point of your life, you know, other than your obligations and your pursuits. You've demonstrated how much you care about them and their success in life. You're putting, and you and Ashley and Betsy, you're putting those building blocks in place at an early age. And I love following the activity and their growth. Tell me about your girls and how they get along, or their personalities, A and B,
sure.
Apples and oranges.
We have to. Well, and to speak of being a great dad, you're a great dad. I think that's one of the things that you and I bond over so well, because, you know, I personally think every dad has an obligation to be a great dad. You know, I don't think there's much of an excuse for not being one. And so I think that's something that we share as kindred spirits so well.
Well,
it's because we love our kids and we work hard for that, you know, because it's not always easy.
Yeah. You know, like you only get one crack at age 3, age 4, age 5, age 6. Now, when they're 26 and 32 and 34, maybe you skip a few years or you get busy. But when they are 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, you can really shape a lot of what's happening, and you're building the bond with them. But yeah, I just love that.
I love it. Yeah. Oh, but to answer your question, the girls, Ellie's 6, Lucy's 8, they're soon to be 7 and 9. And Lucy is the mother hen, sweetheart, always wants to include kids. She's just as kind as could be. Good athlete. And Ellie is super brilliant, beautiful. Like, both of them are real beautiful. And a lot of my friends always joke that Ellie is going to be the Giselle Bundchen of our family. She's really pretty. But she manipulates people, and it's terrible. She'll play. She's super brilliant, and she plays dumb. But she knows if she puts a smile on and is really nice to some random person, she can get whatever she wants out of them. So I kind of like, I'm going to have to like hone her in. I'm like, don't turn into a con man, all right? You could do something with your life. But overall, she's a good kid. They love being sisters, and, you know, they fight like sisters. But at the same token, Ellie can't stand it if her sister doesn't sleep in the same room as her. So we recently moved from bunk beds to two twin beds in the same room. But yeah, lots of personality, lots of fun. They're totally different when it comes to personality. But also, you got to watch out for Ellie, because she's one of those little kids that if she feels like giving you a hard time or gives a little mocking, it'll hurt the soul, because she's a sniper.
Yeah.
So, and then she'll have her sister basically try to rein her back in.
Now, Denny, I know, because I've talked on previous episodes about dads being involved and trying to be around as you can, and I've acknowledged that there are some dads and moms that travel a lot for work, and there's times they just can't be there, and they try to FaceTime or do things that they can do. What advice would you give for people that are in real jet-setting careers and they just, this is what they do? They know that, hey, I would love to be home every night, but maybe in a couple years or something. Well, what advice would you give to people that just are tackling all that and they love their children, but they're just not always home?
Sure. I would say your best bet is, number one, it's not going to work unless you get your spouse is 100% on board. And I think part of like being the husband side of it is, if you're out of town for, let's say, 4 days during the week or 3 days during the week on average, then you owe it to your spouse to give them some alone time while you spend time just with your kids, whether that's taking them bowling or whatever. Let her have some time to be happy and just relax a little and just have some personal time or selfish time. But at the same time, what's nice about being able to give her that is you get just alone time with you and your kids. And then, of course, you can plan family things. So I think when you do that and you go through those planning events, I think it's important when you come home that you can schedule plenty of time and have ideas of what you want to do with your kids. Try not to, you have to set boundaries, which is something I had to learn in my career And I learned kind of the hard way because, you know, I wasn't doing good enough job setting boundaries, but you can tell your employer no. And a lot of people are scared to do that. But the more you say yes, the more they're expecting you to say yes. And if you kind of set an expectation up front and says, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to have you travel here for 2, 3 weeks. And you can be like, no, I'll give you 1 week of them, but who else can we send in these kind of portions? And here's what I expect to get out of these people. And it helps when you get further up in your career. But when you're putting in the gajillion hours, I can tell you that you don't get the time back that you missed. They're not going to pay you that much more if you work 200 hours versus working the 50 hours or whatever. And I would say the best thing in the world you can do is set a boundary that says, you know, on these said days, I'm not taking calls after 6 p.m. My dad used to call it, he wouldn't take a cell phone till he was like in his retired. And they go, his company's like, you have to have one. He goes, no, I don't. He goes, I'll be available by phone during work hours. And after that, I'm not wearing an electronic leash. You can get a hold of me when I'm working. Otherwise, no. And that's the way it was.
I love it. Yeah, it's real easy to say yes, and it's on the other party, they'll happily accept your open-endedness. It's a little harder to say no, but you got to do it, and you'll find, I'm glad you said that, Denny, you'll find in your professional life when you set boundaries and you push back respectfully, or if you sometimes can't be as respectful as you'd like, but if you just hold to what's important to you, I would say more times than not, when it comes to family, you're not going to get challenged on it. And if you do, then you might realize, okay, though, that I'm
I'm not where I need to be.
not where I need to be in the right place. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, when it comes to interviewing, something I learned during my career is if you're looking at other positions or something that might fit you better or be better for your family or whatever it might be or your career, if you tell them up front, say, here's what I'm looking for when it comes to my work-life balance, here's what I'm willing to be able to put in. You need me to travel and put in 16-hour days twice a week, no problem. But I'm not doing every other week. And, you know, holidays, I'm not going to do every holiday. I'm not going to be working overnight shifts and say these are where I'm spending time with my family. So I need to know, you know, up front, because interview the interviewer and say, is this something that you're looking for? For my family's very important to me, my work's important to me. I put 100% into both. And but I'm not willing to, you know, be a bad father or husband in order to succeed here. So is that something that sounds like what would work here? And that throws them off because a lot of times people won't put that back on an interviewer because what are they going to say? Well, we expect you to be available all the time. If they ever say something like that, you can look them dead in the eye and say, that's not going to work for me. So I appreciate your time. I thank you. I hope you find somebody who's willing to do that. I can't tell you how many of them get absolutely tanked by HR or by an executive vice president or somebody who said, that guy's really talented or that woman's really talented. Why would you possibly say that they have to work nonstop when they can produce better in their hours available, right?
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to put it out there because if you say it from the beginning, then they can't change those rules unless you allow them to.
A great point there to not kind of get halfway in and say, oh, I should probably speak up now, but lay it on the table in the very beginning. In your professional career, you've done some big things as far as process improvement, plant design, layout and flow. We talk about priorities to the individual, but you have actually enhanced cultures,
Sure.
internal consulting. Speak to that a little bit.
Sure. I've had a kind of a weird career because I started a company with my sister when I was 12 and she was 16, and we were up at the every day at 4:30 in the morning cleaning offices and bringing in money. And by the time I graduated high school, you know, we sold that company and had employees and all that. And so after that, I took on a bunch of roles at UNC, and then post, you know, college. Well, during the summers, I was actually working at University of Maryland for the first 3 summers at a conference that was on medicine healthcare to help kids decide if they want to be nurses or doctors or if that's the right career path for them. And we taught them bioethics for college credit, right? And so I loved that. And then I ended up going out to run that program over at UC Berkeley before my senior year of college, because technically I had enough credits to be able to do that. And so it was interesting because most of the people who were the teachers and TAs and all of that were med school students making a boatload of cash in the summer to be able to do sessions and get kids credit. And so it ended up being a whirlwind of chaos because the head director nationally didn't check any of the schedules, didn't manage anything. And I'm out there. I'm 21 years old, just turned 21 years old. Everybody who works for me is, 25 to 40. And the site director was in engineering. And essentially, I show up and every single schedule was wrong. Every date was wrong. I had the Surgeon General of the United States supposed to come in at 2 p.m. on Thursday the next week. And I called to verify, and they're like, oh, we're coming Wednesday at 1. Now I have to rebook all the things. You can't reschedule the Surgeon General of the United States. You got the president, the CEO of the company coming, whatever. So that's, I mean, some high-powered people because they paid real money to get to attend these places the students did. Meanwhile, you have to keep them happy. And so I think I slept in the office and ate hot dogs for about 7 straight days. And then the executive VP of that company, they were owned by Barbara, who does bar exams, came in and sat me down and sat the engineering person down and said, tell your side of the story. Pointed at me, and then he pointed at her and said, tell your side of the story. And then she told hers, and he goes, you're wrong, points at her. He goes, you're right, you're promoted. And so now, next thing I know, I'm
Really?
running public speaking, engineering, bioethics, leadership. Those are the four there. And then eventually they had me take over the Stanford sites as well with law and a bunch of other ones. And so that's a lot of learning real quick. And when you can learn to
No
adapt
kidding.
and deal with the craziness, then that's kind of how I set out with the rest of my career. Willing to gamble on it to see if you can succeed, willing to gamble on yourself. So we kind of led from there, then did financial consulting. And then when I lived up in DC, I hated living there. It was not a place for me. And I could go on all day about that. There's some funny stories, but essentially the culture wasn't for me. But people were impolite and just arrogant, and I couldn't stand it. So I made my way down to Florida, and I went to a career fair because all my family moved down to Tampa. And so I met the president over Florida for a company called G&K, and I started talking to him. And he goes, I've been wanting to make a general manager and training program, because he had come from a company called Cintas. And he goes, we've never been able to do it. He goes, you want to design one for me? You can be the first guinea pig. And I said, let's do it. Why not? So I had to learn how to do kind of every role, but then it altered into where I got put in front of the executive VP after a few months. And essentially, that guy was Pat High. To this day, one of the best bosses I've ever had in my life. I don't know if he remembers me, he was out there, but Pat High, who once worked at G&K, you were seriously, he was a spectacular guy. And then the senior VP interviewed me with the board of directors of the company. We're worth about $1 billion annually. And by the end of that, they let me take over all consulting nationally for the company. And we got to do all sorts of fun things. They basically gave me free rein and said, what do you think we could do better here of anything? Just go out there and be creative. And I said, oh, all right. And they hired another guy named Brad who was real creative. And so we did things like redesigning all of their technologies to be able to have a better inventory solution of what's coming in, as well as process flow of understanding the workflow of being able to move product through, as well as redesigning how they label and design out all their uniforms and all that truck design to be able to have it to reduce workers' comp injuries as and reducing total spots that places are put down through supply chain, and then redesigning sales routes to be able to make them denser, to be able to make the route people happier, but also it's just better for the company financially to reduce gas, total hours spent. So everything, all of that kind of stuff. And I had to gamble my career a bunch of times to get in positions like that because it's a lot. If you don't perform, you're getting canned. So, but it worked out. It worked out. Then they ended up setting them up and they sold the Cintas for like, I don't know, $4.5 billion or something.
That really speaks to trust, where somebody at that level says to you, how would you make this better? In just such simple terms, and have at it. And they're not putting any constraints on you to conceptualize this.
Well, and I think when it comes to that, when you say the level of trust, I think it all boils down to just be honest about what you know and you don't know, or what you think. And when people realize that you're always telling them the truth, good or bad, and they appreciate working with you so much better, because there are far too many people out there who are afraid that if they tell them the truth and it's not good, then they'll get in trouble. When instead, that just delays the problem, makes you look worse, makes you look like you're hiding it. And instead, if once you realize and say, here's what I'm thinking, I could be wrong. What do you think? And if you have an honest conversation, that's one of the things I've done in my career that's truly helped me, move up, is just having a frank conversation with people above me. Now, not everybody loves that. Some people love and hire their yes men. And that your job is to do whatever they tell you whenever they want, never speak back, and never have a thought. Your job is to go be a zero and a one, right? And that's not a place for me. So, and I've worked places like that even recently. So,
You can probably tell.
I don't know. That's.
You can probably tell when you're sitting down with someone if they're going to be able to give you some latitude, or if it's like, nope, I already know this guy. There's not going to be an idea exchange, right? Or do you sometimes just know?
Yeah, well, I think when that's when interviewing the interviewer kind of comes in, and that's you're always interviewing people. That doesn't mean you're interviewing for a job, but you are for working with them in some capacity. You're setting up your business relationship with them. That's how sales work, right? Being honest up front. If you're not doing a good job asking questions and communicating, and that's sales. I think that's why I love sales so much. Is if you look at life is always sales. That's your relationship and figuring out how to negotiate something with your family, all the way down to, when you're getting cars or anything else. If as long as you're upfront and you're willing to be able to have a hard conversation and be honest about it, I feel like that's kind of what sets you up. And so you can definitely tell, because when people kind of spend the time telling you what you're going to do and aren't willing to converse about the position or what makes successful or don't know, run, go somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh man, Denny. I'd like to explore this topic for a, entire episode. This is really valuable stuff, Denny.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I'm blabbing on too much about random stuff, but I just like talking with you, my friend.
It's fantastic. How about some lightning round questions here? And this is just some favorites. Okay, so PGA golfers, do you have a current or past favorite or an all-time favorite golfer?
All-time favorite golfer, Jack Nicklaus, maybe even Sam Snead. I don't know, but love them both and huge fan. So I would say currently, I like Scottie Scheffler because he's a good family man and he kicks butt and he's not afraid to be honest about it, good or bad. That's why I like him.
How about favorite Atlanta Braves player, past or present?
Of all times, Maddox. I think that's easily my favorite of all time. So the Braves are actually an old client, and I got to sit. They sat me in the owners right behind the home plate one time, and right when they were in the playoffs, getting right up to the playoffs, just maybe 3, 4 years ago, when they ended up making the whole run, Freeman was there, and I was maybe 4 feet from him when he was warming up, and I said, "Freeman, the guy in front of you is going to strike out, and you're going to home run and win the game." And the guy in front of him struck out, and he hit a home run and won the game. And
Oh man.
so he came by, and he gave me a good point. So I don't know, that for me of recent players, now he's not there anymore, but it was pretty special. It was cool.
Well, the Braves are not going to win the division most likely, but they're sitting in that top wild card spot. They've had a few injuries. Ozzie Albies goes
Yeah.
down over the weekend. He's going to be out a couple months, I think. But, an exciting season for the Braves. Are you optimistic about the playoffs?
I think they're a lot better than people give them credit for. And I think they've invested well in their team. I mean, they don't spend what the Dodgers spend, but I think they've got the right build out for the way they run their clubhouse that I think for several years they're going to be competing to get to the World Series. I think for at least the next 8. So I still think they have a shot at it. I mean, you got to think there was a period of time where the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, before when they were still were the Devil Rays, they added a payroll one tenth of the Yankees and were still competing with them every
Yeah.
year. And I mean, the Braves naturally have a lot more money than that, but I think they have a lot of talent, particularly in the bullpen, that I think they'll be just fine.
I'm a big Chris Sale fan. It's exciting to watch Sale with the Braves. Always, I've got these players and everybody that loves sports, that you would love for them to finally wind up on your team, but they never do. Like Mike Piazza was one. He was so close to coming to the Cubs before he goes to the Mets during his career. He's one of my all-time favorite players. But Chris Sale is one of my favorite pitchers. He'll be.
Absolutely. I mean, just unbelievable.
How about the Tennessee Titans? Do you take the girls out to the Titans games? Any
You
experiences
know,
there? Or?
so they used to be a client in a different time. And I've worked at a lot of games that I've assisted and managed like background stuff for. Not for directly for Titans as a contractor in. And so I've never actually, I don't think, been to a game and sat as just an audience member before. It's a great stadium, though. It's right on that river, right? I mean, you walk to the end of Broadway where all that music was we were talking about, it's directly across the street, has a nice pathway walk. But yeah, I like Titans. I mean, I've been a Bucks fan since I lived down in Tampa. since maybe like 2008 or nine.
That's
And
right.
so,
The buck,
yeah.
and I think you've got a buck story. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I can. I'll keep it short, but the reason I became such a huge Bucks fans is they had won the Super Bowl in the early 2000s. So when I was going there, they were not good. I mean, they were bad. And you could buy tickets. There's two sides to the Raymond James Stadium. There's the sunny side and the shaded side. So tickets on the shaded side almost always are the more popular ones. And then the sunny side, it's like 120 sitting in those red seats. So it's brutal. But back then, you could buy those sunny side tickets for like 15 bucks. So I had a friend who owned a sports club where you would play in a sports league, but there would be social events that were associated with it. And so he would buy bulk sets of tickets, then set up like busing to the games, tailgating the actual game, and then stuff to do afterwards. People would buy tickets for X amount of dollars anyway. So he would bring me in for negotiation because that was one of my things that I did really well in business. And so I'd have a different title every time he'd bring me into a bit. This is Denny's, my contract chief negotiator. This is the COO, whatever, wherever you bring me in. So he brings me in and they aren't doing well. So they're desperate to sell tickets. And we get the woman who gave us, who's the salesperson, gave us a tour. She let us see all the backside of the practice facility. They have a program there called X's and O's. You ever heard of this?
No,
They have, oh, this is cool. You'll like this. So it's exclusive to the NFL as far as I know. It might be in the collegiate, I'm sure it is now. But back then, what it was is they would have every single play mapped out for X's and O's over the real-time play. But what's crazy about it is they have every play of all of their players in recorded history back to when they were in high school. And so what they would do is they would say, okay, here's what happened. You were supposed to do a 6-yard route. You ran an 8-yard route. You got undercut by the cornerback. And so when you're cut back, he undercut you. That was interception. You did the same thing at Florida State your senior year and sophomore year, those incidents. And they show them every single time they did something similar or didn't follow a play. It is mind-blowing. But for every position, for every player, it is so cool. And yeah, so we got to see that for a little while. And then she took us out on the field when they were practicing, got to talk to some players. And then she brought us in to sit, and they had these big 12 person tables for when they were going to have lunch after they showered up and came in. So we hung out there. And I'm 24 or 25 years old at this time, right? Single guy back then. And in my athletic prime back once upon a time. And so we're waiting for them to come in. And all of a sudden we go and the owner's there. He passed away, unfortunately, but he also owned Manchester United, which was, the biggest sports franchise in the world. But he also owned the Bucks and he was there just hanging out with families. And so we got to talk and hang out with him. And then we go to sit at a random table with the sales lady, and all of a sudden these two bombshells walk in the door, and it's the two head cheerleaders, and they come sit right next to us. I'm sure because they wanted to make us happy to buy plenty of tickets. But when we're sitting there, all the players finally come in, and all the players want to sit there with the cheerleaders because they're gorgeous, right? And then we're telling stories, we're joking with them, we're having a fun time. And one of the all-pro players, I forget his name, but he was a defensive tackle. He was probably 6'9" or something. He comes and taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, "I want your seat because I'm sitting next to the cheerleaders." I said, like, "I really like this seat, man." And he goes, "I'll give you." He goes, "I made some. I made it wasn't brownies. It was gosh, what are they called? Those marshmallow treats, whatever they're called, Rice Krispie treats." So he made a thing of Rice Krispie. He goes, "I'll give them to you if you give me your seat." And I said, "All right, deal." So he went to the locker room, brought me Rice Krispie treats.
That's all
I gave him
it
my seat. And then the cheerleader just booted the guy on his left. She said, "Get out of here." So then I got to sit down with him. And the girls invited us to the Miami game, when the season started, and we went. And it was a great time.
Oh man, what a
Been a Bucks
story.
fan ever since.
Were you excited about the Tom Brady season of the Super Bowl? Was
No,
it
that
a
was
couple
pretty wild.
seasons?
Yeah, a couple seasons ago. Well, he did two seasons, right? This first one, Super Bowl, and then second one, almost pulled it off because I had a friend who had tickets down there and he was on a date with a girl for that last playoff game when they were losing by a ton of points. And Brady came all the way back and barely lost that playoff game. So it was really good for him because he had owned tickets for several years. And all of a sudden, his tickets went from like $40 a piece to where if he couldn't go to a game, he could sell a few hundred bucks. But that was something to watch, man. There's a reason he won all those Super Bowls, and it's not by accident.
Tom Brady was one of the players in his prime that I love to hate. He was just one of those guys. If he's not on your team and you're going up against him, which the Ravens were often, God, he was the guy that you wanted to get the better of on his
Always.
home turf in Foxborough, which the Ravens did on their way to the Super Bowl in 2013. But a lot. But that being said, something happens after these guys retire, or even after maybe you get older or something, and you just ease up a little bit and you respect them.
Oh yeah,
you understand what they've done for the game. Kind of like you like Yadi Molina with the Cardinals. I mean, I can't stand the Cardinals, but man, how can you not respect somebody like Yadi Molina? Or
well, I agree. So Tom Brady, they always joke that there was like the button up Tom Brady that had to be up in New England. And then there was Tampa Tom Brady, who threw, I don't know if you know this, but after they won the Super Bowl, he threw the trophy from one vote to another over to the tight end. It wasn't Gronk, it was the other tight end. And he threw it over the water, and it was like 50-foot deep water, and it's the actual Lombardi trophy.
Oh, my God.
Throwing from boat to boat. that's who Tom Brady became with Tampa. When he first got down there, he went to go stay with the coach, Bruce Arians. And so he took his address and the door's unlocked. He walks in and he keeps yelling for Bruce. And Bruce is like, it's not there. It's a huge, beautiful home in this great neighborhood. So Tom's like, puts his two duffel bags down because he's there early, you know, to get ready for camp and talk with the coach. And he goes and opens the fridge and he drinks like three or four of this guy's beers waiting on the coach. And all of a sudden somebody walks in and goes, are you Tom Brady? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, why are you in my house? He walked into some random guy's house, drank his beers.
Tom Brady.
He had the wrong address. Oh, so this guy, can you imagine walking into your kitchen and all of a sudden Tom Brady's in there drinking all your beer?
And you know it's him. There's no question. Real quick, Denny, this is kind of a wacky question while we're on the Bucks. The old creamsicle uniforms. Are you a fan, up or down, thumbs up or thumbs down on those?
Thumbs up. I like them.
I agree. Nothing like them.
Yeah, they're classy, man. You know, your background's not so dissimilar from that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's right. Why I like it so much.
Yeah. The orange came about, if you look at go back to episodes 1 through 5 or 6, and I created that logo, just something to get us going, and it was the orange slice in the clock. So that's where the orange came from, and then Rob Wilson, graphic designer, he came up with this logo, and I think he did a fantastic job with it, but...
It's beautiful, man.
Well,
very cool.
A couple other questions. This one I've been dying to ask just anybody on the show, and it's something that I'm on the road a lot, and I see this stuff, and I'm like, I cannot be the only guy who sits here at a traffic light and looks at this waist-high grass on the side of the road, and maybe not the interstate, but you know, you're driving around town. Danny, do you ever sit there and look at that overgrown grass that the county is supposed to maintain or the city and just thinking, if I had my lawnmower, I would get out and just mow this section, just this one right here, and just take care of that. Do you ever have that urge to landscape just public areas that are just, you know, crazy? And if the answer is no, that's fine, but I just have been waiting to pop out that question.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I would say yes, except I talked to a guy and there's a reason sometimes that they don't maintain those common areas is because they're having issues, particularly in a state like Florida, that when they were cutting grass leaner, they were having erosion issues, which were leading downstream to where that's from. They have to leave very, very large planted because the taller it gets, the deeper the roots get, meaning the more sustained the sandy ground is. And so if you especially see it on a hilly area, they're leaving it on purpose because the longer it is and the less they mow it, the more sustained that hill will stay and protect it from erosion. So there you go.
Oh, man. I'm so glad I asked you that question. I could have easily popped it out.
I could be wrong. That's just what I was told. Somebody might be listening to this going, that guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But that's what I was told by an engineer, so we'll see.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll drive through, you know, people say a bad part of town. I don't know if there's unsavory areas of every city, but I'll drive through neighborhoods where kids are playing. And it's like, my gosh, could somebody just get their mower out and step about 20 feet over from their lawn and just cut that.
Just
and
real quick. Give it a buzz.
Beautify.
I mean, how hard is it? You don't have to edge it all, but at least just run the mower over it.
Have you
ever, especially if you had a riding lawn mower, help the man out.
All right. This question I've also been waiting to ask, and it doesn't really have to be done, but you know, those empty lots, do you ever have an urge to go bush hogging? You come up to a corner lot and it's been sitting there for years and there's maybe no trespassing signs or whatever, but it's like, man, that thing could really, really use some
Yeah, well, I know a guy who owned one of those businesses, and it's a pretty, those things are unbelievable what they do. But what's even cooler is there's a company that's out of here. They also have them up in the Northwest. But for those giant ones, I want to see the goat companies. Have you ever heard of these goat companies?
I think so,
You can
yeah.
rent people's goats, and they'll drop off like 150 goats on your property, and they'll fence it, and they'll eat every branch, every leaf, everything
Oh,
down to nothing.
man.
And they'll leave a lot of goat poop, but then it's literally like you bushed the whole thing, and it's cheaper. So I just want to see it because that sounds fascinating to watch these goats literally turn this way overgrown massive thing. And you should look it up; it's bananas.
That's it.
I don't know how they do it. They'll eat and eat and eat endlessly.
I'm gonna stop cutting my grass, and I'm gonna bring in the goats.
Well, that's what Google does. They hire goats to do their grass. A true story.
Really?
Yeah, you can look it up.
All right, another wacky question here. In airports, what are your thoughts on you're coming out of the men's room at an airport? I think this is where these are most prevalent. And you see that touch screen to rate your experience. Danny, are you okay with that? Do you want to tap the highly satisfied and just give them that tap? Or are you thinking, man, I just washed my hands. I'm at an airport here. I don't know that everybody else has. I don't want to touch anything right away. How do you
Yeah,
feel about it?
word of advice is if you touch it with a knuckle, because that's the least likely thing you're going to touch your mouth with.
Oh, yeah.
So hit it with either a back knuckle or here. And I can tell you that because, I work with a company in janitorial maintenance nationally, and we service airports where we have those rating systems. Those are actually a little surprise for you. Those are applied to satisfaction listings and performance reviews for the janitorial company. So those aren't
Yeah.
just to make you feel better. If they get enough negative reviews, they affect bonuses of the people who clean the restrooms. They affect the bonus of the companies. If you tell them that if you say, oh, this was a negative experience, there's no paper towels, it immediately prompts companies in order to send somebody. So they listen to those reviews in real time at all times.
Because, yeah,
So
because
one side for you.
I really want to participate, but now that you mentioned the knuckle, I'm glad I asked this question because wow, that's my workaround.
There you go. You can either do that, or you can just take your paper towel, use it, pop it, and then throw it in the trash on the way out.
Yeah. Oh man. And we're gonna have to do another episode, Denny, because there's a whole other just so much Denny stuff and more Denny time that I need. And I always run out of time.
Denny and Dan time.
Yes. Oh man, what else did I forget? So, okay, I want to ask you a question about Ashley. This will be like maybe the last one. What is something that your wife Ashley appreciates when you remember to do something for her? Either it's you bring home some flowers and she wasn't expecting them, or you clean an area of the house and she wasn't expecting it, or you prepare a meal. What's something that Ashley appreciates from Denny?
She does love flowers. However, it's not like a end all break all. I think she's more like an acts of kindness person. And so I'm real one thing I've just as an adult gotten really good at is doing more than my fair share of chores, whether it's laundry or vacuuming or, mow. I do the grass and edging and or empty the trash. I'm just good about that kind of stuff. And it doesn't bother me. Like I've been productive in work, and I've had tons of physical work in my life. And so I don't mind doing that, especially if she's not feeling well or anything. And I'll still cook and clean, and I love to cook. And so I think that's something that she appreciates most is the fact that I'm willing to pitch in more even than my half. Don't mind at all, because that way she can get some rest when she needs rest.
I love it, Denny.
But she does plenty herself, though. She's a good woman.
This has been so much fun, Denny. I want it to go on forever. I want to do it
I know, my friend.
one of these days, but I just don't know that there's the appetite for it. But man, I want to just do a 2-hour episode, maybe pop some tops, but probably not. And but you'd be a perfect candidate for it. I think everyone listening.
Whatever you want, man. I don't mind drinking a beer.
Hopefully people listening, this has been it's made your commute so much more enjoyable. You've been in and out of traffic starts and stops and or whatever's going on in your life, and you got the AirPods in, and hopefully this has been a fun hour of your life listening to this man, because it has for me.
Man, I always love talking to you, buddy. I've had a great time.
Okay, Danny, anything else that you'd like to promote? Is there music that you're listening to, a podcast that you're listening to, or something on TV?
Yeah, your show, Dan Time. That's, make
Yeah.
sure you tell your friend.
If you guys give me a rating, you don't have to write a review or anything like that, but I do appreciate it if you rate the show. It kind of helps it survive. It makes it more prominent. Danny, this has been fantastic.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for having me. I always love talking to you.
And come down to the Gulf Coast anytime. I have so many reasons to visit Tennessee now. I think you are at least the fourth or fifth guest that I've had from, you're in Murfreesboro now, but that has connections to Nashville and Tennessee.
It's a great place, man. And it's nice because it's a major city where people are still nice to each other. So it's fun to visit.
Well, have a wonderful rest of the day, rest of the week. And I don't have any allegiance to them, but go Tar Heels. Be rooting. I'm so glad. And I hope she doesn't listen. I have friends that I assume listen to the show, but maybe they don't. I just can't handle, I can't do anything Duke related. I can't root for them on someone's behalf. I'm not happy when they win. I'm very pleased when they lose. But North Carolina.
I've got a ton of stories I can bring up next time about Duke, buddy. Because I used to have to go take some classes over there, and I knew JJ Redick back then, and I'll have to tell you about it. You know, they teach you at UNC to, all right, we say go to hell, Duke, in our actual fight song over the last 100 years. So,
oh man,
you know, but.
But wish you and the girls, Ellie and Lucy, got to call out my mother in law here, Ellie. I think she listens. Eleanor is my mother in law's name, and she goes by Ellie. And I love that your girls have classic names. Big fan of that. And I wish nothing but the best for you and your family, Denny. So great
same,
to see
my
you
friend.
Today.
Same to you. Give your wife a hug and tell her I miss her and say hello.
I sure will. Okay, everybody. That's it for this episode of Dan Time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. And it has been Denny Lyons time today, and we'll do it again real soon. We'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time podcast. And thank you, Denny.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.